Welcome to the Empathic Mastery Show. I'm your host, Jennifer Moore, and I'm so glad you're here. This is a place where we talk about what it means to be highly sensitive and empathic, how this impacts all aspects of our lives, and we explore tools, resources, and solutions so we can shift from absorbing all the thoughts, feelings, and energy of the world around us to being beacons for calm, love, and healing. Hey there, everybody. I am back with another episode, and this is going to be a really interesting conversation. My guest is Julia Marie. And like many other people in our modern world, she was driven and goal-oriented, working in military and family law. Then a series of spiritually transformative events, or STEs as she puts it, changed everything. That sounds interesting, doesn't it? More than three decades later, she now shares what she's learned so that others can benefit from her hard-earned insight and accelerate their spiritual growth. Julia tells the story of her awakening and how she learned to live guided by the voice within in her book, Signals from My Soul, A Spiritual Memoir of Awakening. Julia Marie is a gifted transdimensional healer, intuitive medium, and experienced spiritual teacher. She has provided spiritual consultation and trance healing to a global clientele for over three decades. Welcome, Julia Marie. I am so glad you are here.
Well, thank you so much for the wonderful introduction and happy to be here, Jennifer.
I'm just so glad you are. So I love to start with the beginning about, you know, the being young, being sensitive, how did that impact you? Did you realize that you were sensitive? And we were talking about, you know, no, you didn't necessarily know, but you also didn't really have any tools. So let's start at the beginning. Tell me about younger Julia. Tell me about what that experience was like, life was like for you before the STEs happened.
Well, the STEs didn't happen until I was in my 30s. So I was well down the road, but as a very young child, I had some what might be called extraordinary experiences. I heard the music of the spheres. I felt it with my body when I was 8 and had some other similar encounters. But because I was raised in a household where if you couldn't see it, hear it, feel it, taste it, or touch it, it wasn't real.
Oh, I know that household very well.
In order to survive, I suppressed all of that. So what sensitivity I had, I shut down in order to be able to cope.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Living in a chaotic household with 7 kids, 5 of which were rowdy boys.
Oh, my goodness.
Just the noise and the energy alone kept my nerves. I didn't know I was picking up on the energy around me.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't think you are the very first guest who's ever talked about having the experience of hearing the music of the spheres. Say that 10 times fast.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? Like, what was your experience with that? Like, did it just happen out of the blue?
Well,
Say more, please.
The story's in the book. It was one of the first stories, but I will share it briefly for you here.
Yeah.
The family was moving from Colorado to California because we were getting ready to go overseas because my father was in the military. So we were riding in a station wagon, old school station wagon, 9 people. And we were in the foothills of California when the car got a flat tire. Everybody piled out of the car. I couldn't stand the noise, so I walked kind of away from the rest of the family. And just the outline of the stars up against the foothills, the dark foothills, and then the brightness of the stars in the sky. I feel like what happened was I went into an altered state.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started hearing the sound of what can only be described as voices. Like maybe people would say this is what an angelic choir sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of the sound together was beautiful and harmonious. But if I listened or tuned into one or the other of them, they were more discordant. And then when I realized, oh, I'm not hearing this with my ears. I'm hearing this with my body, the altered state ended. And when I described this experience to a seasoned meditator when I was in my 30s, a fellow person that was in the military, when I described it to him, he said, people meditate their whole lives to hear that sound. He said, that's the sound of creation, basically. But it sounded like voices, a beautiful choir.
Yes, I've had that experience a couple times with drumming, where all of a sudden, and within drumming, I had some friends who referred to it as the African ladies, where all of a sudden you hear this choir of angels. It really is quite remarkable and in some ways almost indescribable. But that experience of you're in this altered state and suddenly it's like there's this harmonic, this chorus.
Yeah.
It really is spectacular. So, you know, obviously you have these incredible gifts. You have this incredible sensitivity. And as you said, you were in a very, if it ain't real, you know, if you can't see it, it doesn't exist.
Yep.
Reality, which made you have to kind of tamp this down.
Yes.
So let's talk about that gap period between 8 years old, where you hear the music of the spheres, and 30, when you started having the spiritually transformative events.
No, I had a regular growing up, I suppose you would say. I was interested in Edgar Cayce and Ruth Montgomery. That was the extent of my spiritual education. So I was always curious about non-traditional things.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to college when I was, you know, in my late teens. Spent some time working in the fields of California so I could pay for my college. And then was getting ready to graduate from college and was not able to complete at that time. Ended up meeting somebody, getting married, had a kid. Kid had medical problems. Okay, well, I don't have medical insurance. So I lost 65 pounds that I gained getting pregnant and went into the military. So,
wow.
Yeah. So I went into the military and that's where I completed my BA in psychology. And then I realize now that was the leading edge of the actual awakening when I started feeling like, well, my uniform's not fitting. But I feel like I need to be of higher service. Being in the service isn't the way I need to serve. So that's when I got the idea, oh, speaking for people who have no voice, that's a higher service. Let me go put myself through the torture of law school so I can speak for people who don't have a voice. And it was shortly after I got my law degree and passed the bar that things happened that facilitated an exit from military service. So I was disability retired and then nothing to do. And that's when the STEs started, basically.
And so let's talk about the STEs. What happened?
I had spontaneous activation of what I would later know to be healing energy. At the time, I didn't know that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
My hands would get hot when I would get around people, but I didn't know why.
Mm-hmm.
I had round red circles appear on my body where I later found out chakras were. They're about 2 inches, 2 inches red circles. Red, you could see them visibly. And I had a stripe up my back that took months to go all the way from the bottom of my spine to the top. I mean, I realize now it was probably a Kundalini activation.
Right, right.
I didn't know what was happening at the time, but it was very uncomfortable and very painful. And along with that came, I feel, probably a blowing open of all the senses that I'd shut down.
Yeah.
And so now I'm seeing invisible people in my living room talking to me, telling me things, giving me principles, and telling me that if I lived my life according to those principles, I could achieve my own enlightenment and I would not need a human teacher. So that's what I did.
Wow. Well, and to go from this very concrete, very like, if you can't see it, it ain't real kind of family system to suddenly you're seeing physical apparitions of spirit in your living room.
Now I'm seeing them in my mind's eye. They didn't physically appear to me. I was strongly clairvoyant. I didn't know that I was clairvoyant. So they were in my mind's eye. They didn't physically manifest.
Because I've been speaking recently with a number of people who've actually had them physically manifest, and where it's like you see them in the room. And which I think it's funny, because if you come from a family where the belief system is, if you can't see it, it isn't real.
Yes.
In some ways,
there they are.
There they are. You can see them. But yeah, I personally am somebody who sees things in my mind's eye, as opposed to seeing things concretely in the physical world as well. So your hands were warming up. You were getting these like activations in all of the chakras and these red blot, you know, red circles on the chakras, a line running up your spine of sort of this kundalini is rising and everything. Did you experience any kind of weird discomfort or like, you know, ringing in your ears, energy surges, feeling like you're plugged into an electric socket, any of that, you know, waking up at strange hours?
All of the conversations with the teachers, I'll just call them teachers, those all happened at night, always at night. And I would say, why can't you just come to me during the day? And they said, well, you're not strong enough to be able to hear what we have to say with the mass of humanity running around in their physical bodies. So we have to wait for them to go to sleep so that you can hear us. And when they would tell me things like this, okay, that made logical sense to me.
Yes.
So I must not be imagining this. They must be really there talking to me, having a conversation. So I tested. It's not like I wrote down everything that I was told. I challenged the information that was being given to me.
Yes.
But it was coherent. It always built on the prior things that I was told. And it was like I was being given a crash course because I'd been asleep. And I almost feel like what I experienced was probably because I'd been asleep, so I'd lost time as far as my own spiritual development. And that first 18 months was a way to get me back on track. That's my that's my suspicion.
Mm-hmm. I will confirm or concur that I've received a very similar explanation for why things are so much more loud at night.
Uh-huh.
And they've basically said people are not suppressing. When it comes to empathic overwhelm and picking up the fear, like, you know, what I called back during the height of the pandemic, I would experience what I call the COVID surges at about 3 o'clock in the morning, where everybody is asleep and their subconscious minds are processing
releasing
the emotions.
Yep.
And they basically were like, yeah, you don't have the distress during when people are asleep. The level of distraction is substantially lower, and therefore you can pick up so much more. So your gang and my gang are saying the same thing to us about
probably the same gang.
I'm imagining they have many names.
Yep.
They, but they're all the they. This actually, you know, I'm thinking, I was having a conversation. So as I was telling you, as of the recording of this episode, we unfortunately just had a tragic, tragic mass shooting in the state of Maine yesterday. And one of the things that's been coming out, bear with me, I'll explain why I'm saying this.
Yeah, it's okay.
One of the things that's been coming out about the shooter is that he sounds like he had a psychotic break. And sometime earlier in the summer, he started hearing voices that were telling him to do things. And they were telling him to go into the Army Reserves and basically just like shoot the Army Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Why he chose a bowling alley instead of the Army Reserve, I don't know if I'll ever understand.
Well, they said that on his Facebook page, he was a bowler.
He was a bowler.
Yeah. So he had an interest in bowling. So there
God
was a connection.
Bless him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the question I have for you is, obviously this man was hearing voices. He was being told things. And yet those voices were clearly guiding him to do things that were not, at least from my perspective, not for the highest and greatest good.
Sure.
How do we distinguish when the voices that we're getting are good and true and valuable and helpful? And how do we distinguish when the voices are either psychosis or just really unhelpful and not useful?
You basically already answered your question. The voices that he was hearing were voices that were telling him to cause harm either to himself or to another.
Yeah.
And any guidance from spirit, the light, however you want to name it, the universe, whatever that is, any higher guidance, in quotes, I put higher, any expanded awareness message is not going to encourage you to do anything of that nature. So if a person is hearing, I started hearing voices too. You don't think my first response was, am I going off the deep end? Do I need medication?
Right.
But everything that I heard was helpful and gave me insight and comfort and was useful. It was something that would help me on my path, help me to improve myself as a human being. That's how you can tell the difference. If it's coming from higher awareness, expanded awareness, it is not, these voices are not going to urge you to do any harm to anyone, including yourself.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. The other thing that I have noticed is that that spirit, in my experience, and what I'm hearing you say, is that you asked questions. You mm-hmm. didn't just accept things. Mm-hmm. You did not just take it at face value. You came into a relationship of trust with them, but you asked a lot of questions. There was a certain healthy, for lack of a better word, healthy skepticism and scrutiny that was going on. And that's something that I've noticed, is that it seems to me that sort of the distinction between divine guidance and mental illness is that with divine guidance, there's still discernment. With mental yes. illness, it seems that there isn't the questioning. There isn't the, am I losing my mind? Am I experiencing mental illness? It seems that often people in that state, they don't question. It just, they don't discern necessarily.
I will say that when the teachings that I received were not found in books that were already written, mm-hmm. I started to believe, despite everything, that I might be going a little off my rocker. At the time, my sister lived nearby, and I explained to her, I think I might be going crazy. Mm. And she said, no. And I said, how do you know that? And she said, because crazy people don't think they're crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy people don't think they're crazy.
They don't.
And
most of them will say that say or feel that they are at the mercy of the voices that are pushing them to do something.
Right.
That's the other element in here. Is they feel helpless to do anything except follow whatever they're being mm-hmm. told to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And spirit is not going to supersede your free will.
No. My guides, they were like, if you need to give us a name, you can call us the Council of We. And so the Council of We will often be like, well, you know, we strongly suggest you consider this, but you do have yes. free will. So you don't have to if you don't want to, but just be warned, there will be consequences.
Well, it took me a couple of bad experiences when I tuned into my guide and said, well, should I do this? And the response was, you can if you want to. And so I said, oh, yay, they just said I could. And so I went and did it, and I had a bad result. And it took me a couple of times to realize, when I hear from them or feel from them, you can if you want to as a response, I need to remember the three dots, but I wouldn't if I were you.
Exactly.
Because they're not going to interfere with my free will choice to experience some misery.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. They're like, well, yeah, you could knock
yourself ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah. So obviously thank goodness you had your sister to say to you, you're not going crazy. Crazy people don't question what's uh-huh. going on. They're at the mercy of the sway.
Yep.
I'm still imagining that it was really intense, like everything activated in you. It sounds like you kind of went from like 0 to 100 really quickly.
Yes, that was the scary part.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have anybody to talk to. I didn't have anybody to ask. There was no internet to Google spiritual awakenings. What do you do? There wasn't any of that.
Yeah, one bookshelf, two bookshelves on the paranormal in the library, if you were lucky. Yeah. I mean, it was definitely a very, well, and if we're talking, you know, what, the 80s when this started to happen?
1989, 1990.
Yeah. I mean, just thinking about that, it was like there were people who were channeling, like there was Ramtha and, you know, there was some of this stuff starting to happen, but it was such a different world. It was such a different time.
Seeing Ramtha on the Merv Griffin show, that tells you how old I was, and how that worked when Spirit came to me and told me what my mission was, I said, oh, I'm not going to channel because this is my body and I'm not going to be dressing up in weird clothes and walking around with a funny accent. That's not my thing. So, yeah, you're right. That was the only quote-unquote spiritual person that was out there was Ramtha. And I was living in Washington State, so she was near where I was living, actually.
Oh, wow. Wow.
At the time I was activated. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, and even the idea of, you know, we've got these trans mediums, trans channels. I mean, there was like, you know, the Seth, Jane Robertson, Seth, where she apparently was, I gather from what I know, she was actually, her husband was, they were scientifically oriented. Mm-hmm. They were very scrupulous, very, very particular with the work. And she would go into full somnambulistic trance states and let stuff out. But then it's like we had Ramtha, and then, you know, we have like Abraham that Esther Hicks is channeling, mm-hmm. but this way in which this idea that for spirit to speak through us, we have to dress funny, the accent, our voice needs to change, that somehow it's like, it's not this conversation or co-creation.
Yeah, I totally agree. I will say I'm way more comfortable with sliding in and out of trance. I think that's one of the things that actually sensitive people can do more easily than other people, because we have less of a hold on our physical body for whatever reason. It's easy to go back and forth like that. I mean, I'm used to it now because most of the healing I do is trance work.
Mm-hmm.
And I do trance communication, just not publicly. So,
right.
But it's, at the time, that wasn't the case. So, and I was not going to make myself into a spectacle. I just wasn't up for that.
Understandably. Well, and then it becomes more about the show and becomes more about the spectacle than necessarily
instead of the
about
message.
The message. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and I also personally, as I think back to it, and my experience is that I identify as a co-conscious channel where information comes through, but I rarely am completely gone or absent from the conversation. But what I've noticed is that when stuff speaks through me, often people will come back a while later and say, oh, you said this. And I'll be like, really? Like there'll be no, I will have no recall of what came through. And I also noticed for myself that there were a number of times where after the fact, it was like I could feel myself coming down, like deflating.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized how altered a state I was in as I returned from being in the altered state.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I totally identify with that scenario. Happens all the time.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like you said, I'm not aware that's what's going on when it happens. It's only later. Because I can hear my voice when I'm trancing. I hear my voice. I hear the words. I just don't remember what I said.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I can sometimes, I'll remember snippets of it, or I can remember the feeling of it. I can sort of see the, you know, like if I was like a lot of times when stuff is coming through me, I'll be staring into something. And so I can sort of remember what I'm seeing, but I may not.
Same thing happens for me.
Yeah.
They'll give me a clairvoyant kind of picture here to watch while they're talking. Yeah. It's interesting. Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So you and I, before we got on to hit record, we were talking about like what your gang has been telling you and the lessons that you've been learning, a large part of it about breaking free of the incredible polarization that is really that this binary sense of reality that we seem to be kind of stuck in as a species right now. Say more.
One of the first things that I was taught or shown had to do with moving my mind from a place where things were up, down, mm-hmm. left, right, and in as many ways as possible, frame things in the context of a continuum. That's why I use the word, I don't use the word ascension.
Thank you.
we're expanding our awareness. And as we become more aware, we naturally shift our vibration.
Yes.
Consciousness is not black, white, red, yellow. It's on a continuum. Consciousness is on a continuum. Some of the vibrations are lower and slower. Some of them are higher and more refined. I always like to give credit to Sepok Neona. She was a Native American pipe carrier. Met her when I was living in New Mexico. And she used to go in the tunnels under Taos. There are tunnels under there, and people say sometimes there's not so nice things in the tunnels. And she would go into meditation on a regular basis and go into the tunnels. And I said to her, aren't you afraid? Aren't you afraid of what you're going to encounter? She goes, no. She goes, I just stand there and open my heart and send them love. And I said, but then what happens? And she goes, they either allow themselves to be enveloped by the love or they run away.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, they are just undeveloped light. So instead of using the term darkness, I say there's light and there's undeveloped light.
Light and undeveloped light.
Now I am not thinking in a polarity way.
Yeah.
It's a continuum, not two extremes fighting.
Right. Right. Well, and I was working with a dear mentee earlier today, and we were kind of working with the idea of understanding incremental shift versus this very patriarchal, very capitalistic perception of win, lose, either you're on it or you're not on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's sort of like, are you succeeding or you're not succeeding? Is the ROI working? And how detrimental to our progress as beings on this earth, this very binary way of looking at everything is like as yes, no, as opposed to understanding the world as a continuum. And all things as a continuum.
So if we could coin a new phrase, continuum consciousness, that just came into my mind, I think that's brilliant. Thank you, Spirit. That's where we need to be operating from. And I'm getting goosebumps. So I know that's a valid thing that I just said. And it makes me want to cry. So I got to write that down
and maybe do something.
Continuum consciousness as opposed to polarity consciousness.
Exactly.
Yes.
You know, and this sort of leads me to the question I mentioned I wanted to ask you, which is they've been telling me we've been as a planet, we've been in what they call, for lack of a better word, a retrograde for the last like 5 to 10,000 plus years as a species.
Coming
to understand, like we've been learning through contrast. We've been learning things through contrast, but we're in the process of pivoting from that awareness. But within that 10,000 years of conditioning, it's so easy, even as we start understanding this idea of continuum consciousness, there's that part of us that can so easily get sucked back into or find ourselves vulnerable to falling into kind of the binary or the duality.
Well,
so what do you do? How do you navigate past that?
I was raised in the Catholic household, and when my teachers showed up for me, they told me to use the Bible and the dictionary as teaching tools. They use those two items. And in the Bible, it says, be in this world, yet not of it. So in order for the collective consciousness to shift, one would have to remain aware the moment one is pulled into polarity and actually self-correct, using discipline to stay and not allow yourself to get oneself to get pulled into one side, quote unquote, or another.
Yeah.
And if enough people hold the pattern of neutrality, then the collective will shift. Period. Yes. End of story.
For me, it's the pattern of peace, of holding the pattern of love and calmness, despite the insanity that is going on in the world around us. And not succumbing. It's so, and yet it is so fascinating how much conditioning we have to jump back into the fray. So you speak about discipline. So I'm imagining, I mean, obviously you've been working on this for a really long time and you have a great team that helps guide you. What was it like earlier in the process when you were more inclined to spin out, when you might have been more likely to find yourself falling back into duality, polarity, good, bad, black, white, yes, no? How did you steer out of that skid before you got to the place where you are now?
The words were "be in this world, yet not of it." So using awareness that that's how I needed to move in the world, I paid very close attention. Well, for one, I quit watching the news. I don't carry a cell phone that's a smart computer. I have a little flip phone that I have to have on me when I'm traveling. But other than that, I'm not connected to the steady stream of stuff that's going to mess with my vibration. Because the other thing they said was, where your attention is, that's where your energy goes. So I kept my attention on my best friends who don't have any bodies and spirit instead of the world I was incarnated in, if I can. That's the best way I can describe it. So it was a matter of practice.
Yes.
Do I get affected when I hear that someone just, you know, shot rockets into Israel and blew up a bunch of innocent people? Yes. What do I do? You spoke about peace. The first thing I do is then ask that peace. And for me, the energy of peace, interestingly enough, is gold with a little bit of pink in it. I send peace to that area because that is something I can do that may change the situation or the circumstances.
Yes.
Because getting upset about it isn't helping anyone.
No.
And it's lowering my vibration.
Recently, they've been showing me that we are all in these currents of energy.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. And that my current of energy is a safe current, and my current of energy is a current of peace and love when I'm in alignment.
Yes.
And what they showed me is, like, the world is deprived of this current if I do not anchor it, if I do not stay in it.
Exactly.
And that everything right now, what we need is for every one of us who is out of harm's way and not just simply in a body trying to keep it alive, that every one of us who has the capacity to generate peace and love, that's our job right now.
Exactly. People ask all the time, how can I change the world? Do exactly what Jennifer just said.
Yeah. Well, and then we can make better choices. Then, because in some ways, you know, one of my mentors, Joanna Hunter, always speaks about, you know, it's like, with spirit, solutions are really simple. If anything's really complicated, it's not coming from spirit.
That's exactly truth.
And, yeah, truth. And the thing is, like, you know, they've been like, you know, the answer for you humans is really simple. You just have to stop behaving like idiots. You know, like, stop being a bonehead. It's that simple.
Come out of your adolescence,
right?
Your rebellious adolescence, and move into the adulthood that you've been on the cusp of for millennia, basically.
Yeah. As well as grieve. I believe that, you know, I believe personally that grief is actually a higher vibration, that avoidance of grief is what gets us into a lot of trouble. And that it's like, grieve the things that have happened address the trauma that is keeping us in the fight or flight reactivity.
Yep.
Move out of that so that we can make better choices. Because so many people are, not only are we in the adolescence, but we're also, many of us are like traumatized five-year-olds who are trying to drive the bus.
Yes.
And it's so important that we break this multi-generational pattern of inherited trauma so that we can make better choices.
I agree.
Yeah. So what does cultivating peace look like for you? How do you do that on a daily basis?
I think it depends on the circumstances. I mean, it's easier now because I'm in a situation where I'm living in a small town where there's not too many people. So there's not too many people to interact with. So I'm pretty much me, myself, and nature. So there's nothing more peaceful than going out on my back deck and watching the twilight, that beautiful magic hour when everything is golden and the trees are on fire and the cows look mystical in the on the hillsides. That is a way to cultivate peace.
Yes.
And just have a sincere appreciation in my heart for being able to witness that.
Yes. Yes. And what a, one of the things I'm hearing in this is go outside.
Yes.
Engage with the world.
With
see
nature.
The beauty in it. Behold nature.
Yeah. Find a park. Find something that doesn't have concrete underneath your feet.
Yes.
Find a tree. I know it sounds stupid, but tree hugging is an actual thing.
It is an actual thing. Right there with you. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to look like a weirdo hugging a tree, what
lean
I
lean against it.
Lean against it. Put your back against
That's
it.
That's correct.
And let the tree. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, just casually watching people go by. Uh-huh. Just resting my, just resting my back a little
just
bit.
Just resting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was, many years ago now, I was in Manhattan with one of my best friends and her daughters and son. And we had been spending the entire day, like going from one museum to another. We had just come out of the Natural History Museum and we're walking down the sidewalk beside Central Park. And we got to this point where there was this tree in front of us and every one of us just ran
to the tree,
like to the tree. And just like, there's like this photograph of all of us just hugging the tree because we were all so like maxed out from being in the city. I want to talk about concrete because you mentioned concrete. And I think that this is something that is so, it's so overlooked, but it's really, really important. Please talk about concrete.
Well, I'm not an expert on concrete. I just know that covering the skin of the planet was something man-made. Number one, the planet can't breathe. And number two, it disconnects us from the earth.
Yes.
I'm a big believer in grounding, in earthing.
Yes.
You know, I would plug Clint Ober's book. It's called Earthing. Mm-hmm. Physical grounding of the body is critical in this day and age, especially for people who are sensitive.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And isn't it interesting that in addition to the fact that we've got asphalt, concrete, and concrete everywhere, that or in many, many, many different places, not only that, but in the last, I don't know, probably like 40 years, our shoes have gone from natural materials, the soles of our shoes have gone from leather to rubber.
Yep.
Yeah, which then means that we are wearing literal shock absorbers between our feet.
Insulators.
Insulators.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
We're literally cutting ourselves off from the vibration of the planet.
Right,
and
right.
That's why, my opinion, people are less healthy than they used to be.
Absolutely.
I didn't realize the difference it made to move out of a big city out into the country until I was about 50 miles away from the big city. I could feel my body change. I could breathe more deeply. I was like, oh, this is what I've been missing. The connection with the trees and the land and the, oh, that's what it was. So
absolutely.
Yeah, it does make a difference.
It really does. Well, and I'm thinking about examples of other people. And, you know, so I have this mentee, actually, I was mentioning earlier, they live in the heart of the city. They live in New York City, mm-hmm. and they live in a high rise and they're on the eighth floor. And so when we are doing grounding exercises, it always takes them much more effort to get their roots into the ground going through eight floors and then a bunch of concrete than it
surprised.
Does for those of us living in a rural environment where maybe we're on the second floor and we have to go through one or two floors and go into the old stone basement. Mm-hmm. But it makes such a huge difference. And then I have another mentee who goes away to this lake property at times to get away, like goes on retreat. And every time they go there, they feel so much calmer and so much better and so much less overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And then within probably 10 to 12 hours of being back in the city, they're immediately inundated with so much more distress, so much more energy, so much more stuff. I personally live in horse country, you know, in sort of horse farm, pine woods, deer and woods and lots of groundhog country. And I will just say that moving out of the city was probably one of the very best things I've ever done for myself. It has made such a huge difference in terms of my capacity to have some distance and some buffer.
Well, and it also makes the signal more clear.
Yes.
My opinion. It's easier
that is
for
my
me to
experience
hear.
Too. Yeah. That is my experience too. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So what else?
Well, I would say that getting back to the fact of people that are empaths and sensitives, the very first episode I recorded on my podcast is called The Empath's Toolkit. It's back when Evolving Humans was the cat podcast, but they can still find it. It's episode number 2 on Evolving Humans. It's a 20-minute episode that gives a whole bunch of tools for people that are empaths that they can use.
Yes.
So I just thought I'd pass that along.
So would you share one tool with us that would be great, that would be helpful for our listeners?
I would say probably the most effective thing to do, especially as you're going throughout the day. I know I've been beating a drum here for the word awareness, but pay attention to your mood and how your body is feeling. And when you come away from an encounter with someone and you feel that your energy is maybe changed in a way that isn't as positive as it was before you engaged, do a very simple, and I don't think this is in the episode, so that's why I'm sharing this one.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to take a moment to send all of that person's energy back to them with love mm-hmm. and gratitude and call all of your energy back to you.
Yes.
And just do that until you feel yourself again.
Yes.
And if that still doesn't do the job, then imagine a shower of light over your head. I make it pink because love is the most powerful vibration in the universe. Mm-hmm. And just shower that through your entire auric field until you feel clean again.
That's lovely. Mm-hmm. I could feel the shower as you were described. Yeah. As you were,
it's
like,
very
I'm like, oh,
effective.
Beautiful.
It's immediate. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will throw in a little and add to with the first part of this. In my experience, it is amplified with our inhale and our exhale. Use your breath. Inhale your own energy back to yourself. Exhale that other person's energy back to them. And personally, I'll also exhale and say, I send this back to where it belongs.
Love and gratitude. Yep.
Yeah. Because sometimes I don't know if it belongs back with them. Maybe
Good
they let
point.
It go. And so I will send it back to where it belongs is what I've got.
Wherever
to
it
say.
Came from.
Wherever it needs to go.
Yep.
Yeah. So we are getting to that sort of just coming into the top of the hour of this conversation. I could talk with you for hours. It sounds like you and I have a very similar team who are telling us very, very similar things.
Yeah.
I guess the other thing I'd ask is for somebody who's just starting to wake up, for somebody who's just starting to cultivate a relationship with their team, with spirit, what advice would you give to somebody? Like, what would be the best first or a good, maybe not the best, but a good first step?
If they want to cultivate that connection, then I'm going to say consistency is probably the best thing they could do. Mm-hmm. So if they're only going to choose 5 minutes a day, same place, same time, 5 minutes, sit. And you can either, I say, you only ever have to ask two questions. What do I need to know, or what do I need to do next? Those are the only two questions you ever need to ask Spirit. What do I need to know? What do I need to do next? So choose one of those two questions, sit, tune in with the intention, because intent is everything, of receiving guidance from your higher wisdom. And then allow yourself to either feel what comes into your physical body. Maybe you get thoughts in your mind or a song starts floating through. The minute you ask the question, the universe will respond.
Yes.
The more you ask the questions, the more the universe will respond. So if you try that 5 minutes a day on a consistent basis, eventually you won't have to sit and be quiet in order to hear the connection. It'll just be there all the time.
Yes. 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 So persistent action.
Yeah.
But also, like, same time, same place.
Yes.
Doesn't have to be a lot, like 5 minute, you know, like find what works for you, but stay with it consistently. And two basic questions.
Yeah.
What do I
need
to know?
Ask. Yep.
Yeah.
Two questions.
And
that's it.
What do I need to do next?
Yep.
They tell me most of the time, if I ask them, what do I need to do next? They're like, we already told you. And then their answer for the last like 35, 40 plus years has been, do what is before you and the rest will be revealed. Like, they're just like, they're always like, do the thing we told you. We're not going to give you any more information until you do the thing we told you to do.
Well, sometimes one is not sure what the guidance is. Then I always ask, what do I need to know? If I'm following what I believe to be my guidance is and I run into snafu, then I ask, what do I need to know? Because obviously I missed something.
Right, right,
and
right.
What do I need to do next? People need to understand. Sometimes the answer is wait.
Yes. Yes.
And we're not real good waiters.
We are not good waiters. No. We are, as a species, we are incredibly, incredibly impatient. For
well, you
sure.
Know, we're called human beings, but we have a tendency to be human doings.
Yes, we do. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, coming back to human being and giving ourselves permission to pause and wait.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the consistency with the same place, I will just share what I was told, why the same place.
Yeah.
If you go to the same location every day with the intent of building your connection with your guidance, your soul, spirit, whatever you want to call it, that builds an energy field in that location that makes it easier for them to connect.
Yes.
So you're building a place for you to get a better connection by going to the same place to get a better connection.
You just answered something. When I was working on channeling the book I'm currently editing, I sat in one specific spot at this writing retreat the entire time. A year later, I came back and I sat in the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm editing, I am sitting at one spot in the house where it just feels like it is easier for me to connect and do that.
Yeah,
you're building a field.
You're literally
building a field.
A little portable matrix to work in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So now we are at that point where it's like,
okay,
oh my goodness, Julia, I can't believe how fast the time has gone by. So is there any other thing that you feel like, I really want to be sure I say this, or I'm going to kick myself? Or maybe, I mean, you might not kick yourself because you learned not to be kinder to yourself, but is there anything that feels like I must say this? Or did they want to say something?
I would say that the most important thing for everyone who's listening to understand is you are not alone. You're not going through whatever you're going through by yourself. There are beings, either past loved ones or your own guides or spirit helpers, waiting to help, to provide comfort, and to provide clarity and to give you guidance if you would just let them. Just remember, you are not alone.
Thank you. And you said what, you know, the operative words are if you just let them.
Yes.
And I find that it's like we have to give them permission to help us.
Yes.
We have, and you know, we need to ask. We need to say, you know, will you please help me? Or I give you permission to help me. But they can't intervene if we don't let them. But when we do, it's a game changer for sure.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Julia, the next thing I love to do, and I love to do this, I do this at pretty much every single episode, is a time traveling exercise. Because
okay.
What I believe is that, bear with me, listeners who've heard me say this a million times, what I believe is that podcasts exist outside of time. They exist mm-hmm. in perpetuity. This uh-huh. will sit on a server for many years and people will be listening to this for a really long time to come. But in the way that time is an illusion and uh-huh. everything is only here and now, I believe that this broadcast is like a stone dropped in the river of time. The ripples go both ways. Uh-huh. And so we have the ability to not only send a message forward into the future, but we can also broadcast and send a message to a very precise and specific point in time in the past, that we can fold the river of time over on itself and touch a point in the past and bring medicine to young Julia. So my question to you is, where, who, when are we going back to and giving a message to? And what are you saying to her? What is the exact message? Not, I would say to her, but speaking like you're broadcasting this message to her and telling her this. So where, what, who, and let it rip.
I feel like I would speak to my 12-year-old self. And I would say, it's not just your imagination. It's real, and someday you'll come to understand just how real those experiences are. Don't worry about it now. You're being watched over and cared for.
Mm. You are being watched over and cared for.
Mm-hmm.
This is real, and you will understand it. Someday later.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Thank you. That was awesome. Okay. Last question. How do people get in touch with you?
They can find me most quickly at my website, www.juliamarie.us. And there they'll find the Academy for the Intuitive Arts. If they want spiritual consultation or energy healing, I do all of that distance. And the classes are about learning how to more comfortably connect and understand your intuition. If you want to learn how to connect with loved ones on the other side, that's the mediumship track. And I'm starting to attune people to the energy that was activated in me. So that's something that happens twice a year. It's restorative energy technique. It's a 5D modality that, according to my students, is like Reiki on steroids. They'll also be able to find when the book is published, hopefully in November. They'll also be able to find out when that's going to happen. All of that'll be on the website.
As of, or at, in the terms of the timing, you guys, by the time this episode airs, I'm pretty sure Julia's book will have aired or
Perfect.
Will have launched.
Okay.
Because the timeline, this will be coming out after November.
Okay.
So you guys, and we will include the link in the show notes for Julia's website, as well as for her book, Signals from My Soul, a spiritual memoir of a rake of awakening. And again, if you guys want to reach out to Julia, it's Julia Marie, JuliaMarie.us. And, you know, tell her I sent you.
And if they're interested in short, instructional kind of educational kind of podcast episodes, evolvinghumanspodcast.com is the place to go to learn about intuition and energy healing and a medium's life and all of that kind of stuff.
Wonderful. So, and we'll include the link for the podcast in the show notes as well. So if you guys want to jump on over to empathicmasteryshow.com for show notes on this episode, then you'll be able to find everything that you need there. Julia, thank you so much for this rich, just nourishing, beautiful conversation today. This has just been lovely.
Well, Jennifer, it was mutual. I had a blast. I love nothing more than to talk spirit.
Yeah.
And so you gave me the opportunity to do that, and you did it in a really masterful way, no pun intended. So thank you for allowing me to come on your show.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
As we come to the end of this episode, I'd love to hear what you're taking from this show. Please jump over to empathicmasteryshow.com to leave your comments. In the show notes, you'll find a link to grab your copy of My Empathic Safety Guide, 3 Basics for Finding Calm in the Eye of the Storm. And while you're there, please subscribe and follow this show. And thank you for your help sharing this show with the people who need it. Please help me to spread the word and send this podcast to friends or family members who need support living as highly sensitive empathic people. Then join me again when the next Empathic Mastery Show airs. Okay, one last time. Hop over to empathicmasteryshow.com for your empathic safety guide. And until next show, shine on. We need you and your gifts here on this planet. So please don't judge your empathic rainbow by colorblind standards.